Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
State of the Union Day.
President Obama giving his second State of the Union address tonight.
President Obama's going to tell you how he plans to create more jobs.
Lawmakers plan a show of unity tonight. Many plan to cross the aisle, sit with members of other political parties.
Will the American people buy what President Obama sells in tonight's State of the Union address?
Everyone will be paying attention to the president's words.
Tonight is his opportunity to lay out for the country his priorities.
He's going to have a speech that in certain ways is like Ronald Reagan.
Talking about optimism, talking about looking forward.
The stage is set for those themes to resonate and to ring true and not to ring hollow.
He's going to challenge us to do is to raise our game.
We live and do business in the information age, but the last major reorganization of the government happened in the age of black and white TV. There are 12 different agencies that deal with exports. There are at least 5 different agencies that deal with housing policy. Then there's my favorite example. The Interior Department is in charge of salmon while they're in freshwater, but the Commerce Department handles them when they're in salt water. I hear it gets even more complicated once they're smoked.
Ha ha, oh, is he hilarious or what? This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest on the State of the Union speech and so much else. To all of you out there, members of the Savage Nation, I just want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight, and to you, Michael, in particular, I want to thank you, my good friend, once again, for the incredible honor and opportunity of filling in into your incredibly, incredibly legendary shoes. Really, Michael, I just can't thank you enough, my buddy. My friends, there you heard it. Here was the president in his State of the Union speech addressing the nation. And as he made his glib comments, as he tried to be funny, as he tried to reposition and repackage himself as a centrist, what was really happening last night? What really took place? If you go to michaelsavage.com, you will see some must-read stories, but there's two in particular I really want to draw your attention to because it captures the essence of the smoke and mirrors show that we saw yesterday and that we are going to continue to see with the Obama presidency for the next 2 years. An AP fact check, I can't believe I'm saying this, but the Associated Press actually had the guts to hold Obama accountable for once. Obama and his imbalanced ledger. If you look at all of the spending promises that he made yesterday, the numbers do not add up. On the one hand, he is trying to portray himself as a sort of born-again fiscal hawk, as somebody now who's suddenly concerned about the budget deficit after he was the one who racked up trillions upon trillions upon trillions onto our national debt. And if you go to michaelsavage.com, here is the one key statistic. It's the only one that matters after last night's speech. CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, here's the title. This year's budget deficit to hit $1.5 trillion. My friends, we are going broke. This man is amassing a larger budget deficit in 1 year, this year, than George Bush amassed in 8 years of his presidency. And he was the most tax and spend reckless big government conservative we've ever had. And now he is being outdone by this con man in chief. And so as he stands there and plays these smoke and mirrors, these games, where we're going to hold the line on domestic discretionary spending, What did Obama do and say last night? We're going to spend more on education. We're going to spend more on research and development. We're going to spend more on infrastructure. We're going to spend more on construction, more on wind and solar power. In other words, la revolution lives on. The revolution lives on. He is still a radical socialist at heart. Even with the drubbing he took in November, even with the stark repudiation of his attempt to transform America into a social democratic European state, even after the repudiation of the Tea Party and Middle America and independence, he cannot let go of that socialist snake oil. It is what feeds him. It is what nourishes him. It is what sustains him. It is what he lives for. And so as he stood there in all that pomp and ceremony, standing there and patting himself on the back, telling all of us what a great leader he is and how the state of our union is strong, our deficit this year will now hit the highest it has ever hit in American history, $1.5 trillion. Members of the Savage Nation, these are not just figures. We are mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren. We are burying this country under a mountain of red ink. We are slowly becoming the United States of Argentina. And under this third-rate constitutional law professor, under this comrade and con man in chief, under his presidency, we have now amassed more debt than in the first 225 years of our entire history. From George Washington to George W. Bush, this man has outdone them combined. That is how reckless and irresponsible he's been. That's how radical and dangerous he's been. And so, don't get caught up with all the inside Washington games. You noticed Fox News, the supposed conservative opposition to the Obama regime, the supposed conservative cable news network, how soft and light they were on Obama and on all of his cronies. He is not a centrist. He cannot repackage himself, because when you scratch underneath the top of the surface, what do you find underneath? You find the man who was nurtured by Bill Ayers, by Jeremiah Wright, by Frank Marshall Davis, his mentor, who is an unabashed communist. You find a man who believes in the Ivy League that he came from, a postmodern socialist. His own father was an anti-colonial, anti-Western leftist. As he said in his own autobiography, I carry the dreams of my father. And the dreams of Obama's father are that of a post-colonial, anti-American leftist agenda. And so, while he may talk a game of fiscal responsibility, the reality is he is breaking America's back. He is breaking our budget. He is breaking our economy. He is breaking our country. And if you notice, this to me was the most chilling thing of the entire spectacle of last night. Here was the President of the United States. As we are now amassing deficits that no country can repay, as we leverage and destroy the futures of our children and grandchildren to pay for his socialist takeover of our healthcare system, to pay for his takeover of the business sector, to pay for his takeover of the insurance industry, for him to implement his socialist transformation. What country does he praise? What country does he lick the boots of? The very same country and leader that he bowed to just a week ago, China and the Chinese president Hu Jintao. It is Obama who is telling us in that speech, China is not an adversary. China is not a rival. We welcome China's rise. We so welcome China's rise, according to the dear leader. We must emulate her education system. We must emulate how good they are with wind and solar power, how they're so adaptable to environmentally friendly technologies. It is like the 1930s, when the left betrayed American and Western democracy, when all of them who now lie and hide about their shameful past cheered Adolf Hitler, when the New York Times and the New Republic and even FDR borrowed many Nazi programs and said, look at this National Socialist, look at this great progressive in Germany, look at what this dictatorship is doing. Democracy is messy. Dictatorship is efficient. That is what Obama was praising last night. It's what Thomas Friedman has said. It's what David Brooks has said. It's what the New York Times has said. We should follow China. And so last night, my friends, you saw a con man trying to pull the wool over the eyes of the American people. And so the question I have for you is a simple one. What did you think of Obama's State of the Union address? Do you think he has succeeded in frauding and defrauding the American people, in conning the American people into thinking he is a born-again centrist? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
If we truly care about our deficit, we simply can't afford a permanent extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest 2% of Americans.
That was the dear leader telling us we can't afford to extend the Bush tax cuts much beyond 2012. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Members of the Savage Nation, even the class warfare club, he had to pick up and try to bash middle America and conservatives and the Republicans with. Even that he couldn't leave alone. He is so politically naive, so politically stupid, that even the very thing that has helped supposedly reposition him as a kind of bipartisan centrist, he even has to make fun of that. He even has to poo-poo that. And so the question I have for the dear leader is a very simple one, dear leader. Tell me, how come we can afford all your new spending initiatives? How come we can afford all new spending on education, all your new spending on infrastructure? We can afford Obamacare. Oh, trillions of dollars of a new entitlement. No problem. No problem. When you carved out that deal with the Republicans during the lame duck Congress, dear leader, and you added $313 billion in new spending that the Republicans caved on, which Fox News doesn't want to tell you about or many other conservative talk show hosts because it makes the Republican Party look bad. Tell me. When you added those long-term extensions, 13-month to unemployment benefits, tell me, dear leader, that's no problem. That we can afford. But to soak the middle American families with who make $200,000, $250,000, $300,000, oh, no, no, we can't do that. No, the sky's going to fall. God forbid that we should keep the Bush tax cuts in place. No, no, we can't do that. No, 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 no. You can't keep money in your pocket. No, it comes to me. That's mine. I own it. We own it. Here is what I would have said last night if I was the commander in chief. My fellow Americans, our union is not strong. Our union is now precarious. Soldiers, the sons and daughters of American mothers who are dying in Iraq and Afghanistan. Afghanistan is our longest war. Have you noticed we hardly even mentioned the troops last night? We are at war, my friends. Our soldiers, our troops are shedding their lifeblood as I speak to you right now. We are in a state of war. Nothing comes first except all-out victory for our troops in Afghanistan. And if they have to make sacrifices to protect the American homeland, then we must all make sacrifices to protect the American homeland. And the greatest economic threat is our surging and soaring deficit. It is a dagger aimed at the heart of our children and our prosperity. And so we will cut Social Security. We will cut Medicare. We will cut Medicaid. We will cut welfare. We will cut corporate welfare. We will cut food stamps. We will end all of the giveaways to the bureaucrats, the public sector unions, the welfare bums, the drug addicts, and corporate greedy business America. No more bailouts for anybody. we're going to slash $1.5 trillion from that budget. And we're going to balance this budget. If our boys can fight and die, then don't tell me we can't sacrifice here. That would have been a leader. That would have been a president. That would have been a true speech. Instead, what did we see? Games, smoke and mirrors, a little gimmicky rinky-dink supposed freezes on domestic spending, domestic discretionary spending, when already spending is at record levels. It's like you taking out a third loan, buying a yacht and two cars and two Mercedes and literally vacations three times a year that you can't afford and say, okay, we're going to freeze spending now. We don't want to spend anymore. Don't buy that extra cell phone, Sally. Hey, honey, don't buy that extra cell phone. I'm freezing spending right now. That is literally how ridiculous they sound here in Washington, D.C. And I look at the Republicans, and the best of them, Paul Ryan, is saying we have to cut $100 billion from the deficit. It's a nice start. Don't get me wrong. But we cut out $100 billion. We're not $1.5 trillion in deficit. We have a $1.4 trillion deficit. We're still in a deep hole. In other words, nobody is serious. Nobody understands or cares to understand the mortal threat that we now face. And so, members of the Savage Nation, I ask all of you, what did you think of the speech? Do you think it was effective political theater? What did you think of Michelle Bachmann's response? What did you think of Paul Ryan's response? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. We're going to take your calls right after this break here on the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage here on the Savage Nation.
President strove to do, and I think he had some level of success with it today, was not even about finding ground, but taking a higher ground. You know, quite frankly, we have many good relationships among Democrats and the Republicans in Congress. You really just don't see that.
This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com for the latest must-read stories. That was the piranha, Nancy Pelosi, on Fox News. She was on with Greta Van Susteren, giving her analysis. And I don't know if you caught the interview or not, but to me, this was one of the most softball, puff interviews I have ever seen. Here again, this is the supposedly conservative cable news network, which is supposed to be the great enemy of the Obama administration. It's what Obama has been vilifying and his cronies for the last 2 years, calling it a, quote, illegitimate news network. And so they have the piranha on, and there she is giving one lame softball hack answer after another, saying how great the speech was, how great the Democrats are, how great Pelosi is, how great Obamacare is, how great the administration is, and untouched. Greta Van Susteren didn't even lay a glove on her, didn't even lay a finger on her. This is what I'm talking about when I say that's the phony right. This is the disease that is affecting large segments of the so-called conservative movement. Nobody wants to speak truth to power. What I would obviously say to the piranha is this. Tell me, former House Speaker, former Madam Speaker, if you guys did such a brilliant job, tell me, why are you now in the minority? Why have you lost your job? Why did they kick you out on the street? Tell me, if you guys did such a great job, why is our bond rating about to be downgraded? Tell me, why is unemployment still near a 10%? Why are we now becoming literally the international joke of the world community? That's what your administration and your Congress and you Democrats have done. And you stand here and lecture us? and pat yourselves on the back after you've presided over one of the worst Congresses in American history? We are never going to dig ourselves out of the hole and the debt that they've put us in. We are going to be paying for this for generations. And instead of holding the politicians accountable, the one who did the dirty deed, the ones who betrayed the American people and the American Republic, we stand there and we glorify them. We stroke their egos, so happy that Nancy Pelosi will give Greta Van Susteren an interview. And this is what I have realized about the media in Washington and in New York. Not everyone. Frankly, my paper, The Washington Times, is one of the best. It's why I work there. But many media outlets, what they care about is access. They just want that interview with a powerful, prominent politician. Well, if all you care about is access, how tough can your questions be? Because if the questions are too tough, if you stand there and really rake them over the coals and really expose them for the frauds and power-hungry politicians and con men and con women that they are, then they don't want to come on your show anymore. So it's all one big racket. And this is why they fear the likes of Michael Savage, why they fear the likes of me, why they fear talk radio, why they fear the new media. Have you noticed? They don't want to censor newspapers. The Democrats never call for censoring newspapers because they have the print media in their pocket. They don't call for censoring, for the most part, cable news. No. That they have in their back pocket. What they want to censor is talk radio. What they want to censor is the internet. That's the dissent they must stifle and crush. That's the enemy that they can't seem to repress or suppress. That's what scares them, because they are the last forms left of honest, open speech in America. What we are witnessing, and there's no sugarcoating this, is the collapse of the American Republic. We have gone from being a nation of producers to a nation of consumers. We have gone from being the world's largest creditor nation. Do you understand that? We once literally lent the money for England, France, and Germany in World War I and eventually after World War II. We rebuilt Europe. The world looked to us for us to lend them money. And now we are the world's biggest debtor. Personal debt, government debt, national debt, it is all soaring. There is no longer any sense of personal or national pride or responsibility. And where is our media? They are silent. They are quiet. They are essentially lapdogs. And so, what did you think overall of Obama's performance? And what did you think of the cable news coverage? What did you think of the media's coverage? Do you think they held Obama's feet to the fire? Or do you think they were just simply mouthpieces for the regime? 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Let's go to our blazing phone lines. Tom in New York. Tom, thanks for holding, and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff Cooner, filling in for our earthly archangel, Michael Savage. That's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
Jeff, oh, thank you so much, Tom.
What time is the Titanic? Financially speaking, the United States is the Titanic. The first mate yells, "Ahead, Captain, iceberg." The captain says, "Maintain speed." Jeff, Michelle Bachmann nailed it. We're in deep trouble financially, and we've got to balance that budget. And thank you, Michelle Bachmann, for looking in the Tea Party camera to grasp with CNN.
Thank you so much, Tom. I thought, frankly, that was the performance of the night. It wasn't Paul Ryan, who's a smart guy. Don't get me wrong. He's a smart guy. I know him. I've been covering his career for a couple of years on Capitol Hill. Brainy Republican policy wonk, has some interesting ideas, but he's no match and no force for Obama and those gangsters in the White House. That I guarantee you. But Michelle Bachmann, that's a different story. She is now, I think, becoming slowly the titular head of the Tea Party movement. And what you are now seeing is a division within the Republican camp, a deep, deep cleavage and division between mainline establishment Republicans. led by the likes of Tea Party activists and middle American conservatives like Sarah Palin, like Michelle Bachmann, like Marco Rubio, like Rand Paul, like many of these Tea Party activists. And if you notice, just look at this fundamental difference. A John Boehner, a Paul Ryan walks around on Capitol Hill and says, or an Eric Cantor, we have to cut $100 billion from the deficit. This is going to be Herculean. This is going to be gargantuan. We're going to break our backs, but somehow we're going to find $100 billion. Okay, so the deficit goes from $1.5 trillion to $1.4 trillion. Okay, pick your poison. You're going down anyway. You're going bankrupt. Just maybe a little slower. And Rand Paul comes out and says, we got to slash $500, $600, $700 billion. It is now time to get serious. We are living in two Americas. And those two Americas, those warring camps, are going to be fought out in the Republican Party. And so to me, the speech of the night clearly was Michelle Bachmann. It was 6-7 minutes. It wasn't full of cheap platitudes and cheap lines. And basically, she laid it out there. Do you want us to go down the road of socialist ruin and disaster, or do you want us to return to being a self-governing constitutional republic? It's really that easy. It's really that simple, my friends. And so now, what you are going to see over the next 2 years is Obama is going to intensify his assault upon traditional America. And now we're going to find out what the Republicans are made of. Is this the old George W. Bush, Karl Rove, John McCain, get along, go along Republican establishment? If it is, the Republic is over. Conservatism is over. This nation is over. The left will have won. You will see Obama get reelected in 2012, and that will be the final nail in America's coffin. Or are we going to see a Michelle Bachmann emerge, a dark horse, in 2012, and take the nomination away, stun the Republican establishment, defeat Obama, and restore this country to what it once was? Let's go to Gil in Chicago on line 3. Gil, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff, thanks. You know, I used to listen to Michael a lot, and I'm sorry, he was very dogmatic to the right, and it seems like you guys are not drinking the Kool-Aid on the left or the right anymore, and I so appreciate listening to you tonight and getting that, but I just don't know who to vote for in 2012. Do I want the big government nonsense from the left, or do I want the laissez-faire nonsense from the right that destroyed this economy between 2003 and 2007, and now the left is putting the nail in the coffin and taking over where the right left off in 2007. I am so frustrated and so exasperated with both of these parties, the McConnells on the right and the Barney Franks on the left. We just don't know where to go with our decisions for this system.
Gil, let me be very candid with you. I'm a practicing Roman Catholic. Let me be almost in the confessional with you right now and with members of the Savage Nation. I believe our future is at stake. I believe our republic is at stake. I don't say this lightly. I see the ominous danger signs. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I know the right wing has been saying in this country for the last two decades, especially some of the other conservative talk show hosts, you got to be optimistic. Reagan was optimistic. You got to be optimistic. Gingrich was optimistic. George W. Bush was optimistic. If you want to be a conservative in America, you got to be optimistic. I'm not optimistic. I'm sorry. I'm a realist. It's worked for me. It's worked for me my entire life. I advise it for you, but that's up to you. I am not going to cloud my eyes and cover my eyes and say, you know what? Tomorrow will be a better day just because we live in America. No. America is like any other nation. If you make fatal decisions, wrong decisions, you will pay the price. We have not somehow repudiated the laws of history or the laws of political and economic gravity. You rack up enough deficits, you rack up enough government spending, you socialize enough of your economy, you destroy it. You tax this country into oblivion, that prosperity is gone and it never comes back. And that's just life. So, I share your frustration, Gil, and let me tell you what I think is going to happen. Mark my words, mark the date, mark the time. I believe the Republicans are going to put up some phony establishment candidate in 2012. My money's on Mitt Romney. Romney may win or may lose against Obama. I suspect he will lose. Obama is doing what FDR did. He is buying votes. Already his poll numbers are going up. Already the American people are being conned into buying Obama's socialism and buying his now phony centrism. And when Obama wins, you will then see amnesty for illegal immigrants. You will see cap and trade, and you will see massive tax increases. We will become like Europe. And then the Republican Party will collapse. It will literally splinter, just as the Whigs and the Federalists before them splintered. And a new party from the ashes will emerge, a genuine Tea Party, an American Party, a conservative party, a third party rebellion. And then you will see a final confrontation between the forces of the right and the left. That is what I honestly believe. I believe the Republican Party is a dying carcass. It doesn't even know that it's dead yet. But this elephant is now on its last legs. It's about to fall. And they think they're going to pull one last swindle. You really believe John Boehner is going to cut spending? You really believe Mitch McConnell is going to balance the budget? You really believe Eric Cantor is going to balance the budget? If you do, I have some swampland in Florida you may be interested in. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Responsibility is to keep the American people safe, to strengthen the middle class by creating jobs, reduce the deficit, and the best way to do that is by innovation, which begins in the classrooms.
That was Nancy the Piranha Pelosi on Fox News, essentially giving a puff interview. And so Obama yesterday called for a Sputnik moment. This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. And the question I have is, what Sputnik moment? What is this guy talking about? Now, all you have to do, don't even take my word for it, is go to the Washington Times, go to WashingtonTimes.com. There is a sizzling lead editorial that all of you should read, which compares what actually happened under Sputnik and now this supposed new call to spend more money on education. It's called Spaced Out Speech. In the 1950s, when the Russians launched the first satellite into outer space, why did it shake this country to its very foundations? Because we were facing a mortal enemy, communist Russia. And now who dominated the space race would dominate nuclear technology and maybe even have the ability for a first strike nuclear war. That's why America was shaken to its very core. That's why we had to eclipse the Soviets in math and science and physics and reading. But now the dear leader is saying, no, in a new world and with economic globalization, this is now our new Sputnik. But there are no goals. There's no passion. And most importantly, there's no adversary. For Obama, there's never an enemy. There's never an adversary. That's what the Washington Times points out. And the boys hit it right on the head. And if you look at Obama and look at everything the left has been saying, why do they keep pushing for more money for education? That's all I've been hearing now for 20 years. More money for education. More money for education. Smaller classroom sizes. Better teacher salaries. Better textbooks. Because a public school system has become indoctrination centers and indoctrination camps for our children. Have you noticed this one fact that Obama and the left and Pelosi will never admit to or tell you? No other country in the world, with the exception of Luxembourg, spends more per pupil than the United States of America. Not Finland, not Japan, not China, not Singapore, not Norway, not all of these other countries that are literally crushing our kids, decimating our kids in math, reading, and science test scores. They are blowing our kids out of the water. In fact, many of them spend half, even a quarter of what we spend. And so the question is, we're spending all of this money. In fact, since the 1960s, trillions of dollars, not billions, trillions of dollars, right down a rat hole. And we have been getting nothing for it. Why? Because, my friends, the problem with education is not a question of money. It's a question of culture. when you have a culture that celebrates sex, that celebrates drugs, that celebrates adolescent teenage rebellion, you can't learn. It doesn't matter how many textbooks I give you. If you're the only student in a classroom, if the teacher's making $300,000 a year, if the brains are not there, if the will to learn is not there, it's not going to happen. I have a niece. She is now 11 years old. Do you know now what she's telling her mother? Her mother just told me this a couple days ago. In her grade and in her school, 12, 13-year-olds are going out. They are dating. They are even experimenting with sex. Drugs at 12 and 13, they're already starting to sniff glue. They're already getting into meth and ecstasy. We're talking 12 and 13-year-olds. This is a legacy of the 1960s. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's all our kids know is Lady Gaga and Madonna and how to snort cocaine up their nose and how to have promiscuous sex. And so when I talk to teachers, they say, Jeff, this is not a learning environment. They are literally out of control. And we don't know what to do. Even if you want to learn, you can't learn. And when they do learn, it's global warming. It's America is the center of imperialism and racism and sexism and homophobia. They are brainwashing our children. That's why they want our money. Mrs. Pelosi, there's only one way to really solve America's education crisis. And that's to return to homeschooling and parochial schools. Once they took God out of the schools, they destroyed our schools. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is away tonight. I'll be filling in for him. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest sizzling must-read stories. To my good friend, Michael, I just want to thank you once again from the bottom of my heart for the incredible honor and opportunity for filling in for you tonight, Michael. Truly, I can't tell you what an honor and a pleasure it is. The State of the Union speech, the State of the Union, my friends, is in our hands. And to me, what I find absolutely remarkable is despite all of the damage that Obama has done to our borders, to our economy, to our health care, to our foreign policy, the media continue to lionize and glorify this man as if he was a political messiah. And yet, what I can't help think about is as I'm speaking to you right now in the studios in Washington, D.C., we are now being pelted with a major snowstorm. I barely got into the studio. The roads are atrocious. There are cars stranded on the side of the road. The city has literally become paralyzed. A couple of inches of snow has brought the capital of the United States, the modern-day Rome of the Roman Empire, to its knees. And why? Why can this city not handle a few inches of snow? I am originally from Canada. I was born and raised in Montreal. We plow through snow down there. I have friends in Chicago, Philadelphia, New York, New Jersey, Green Bay. Snow is not a problem. A foot of snow is not a problem, never mind a couple of inches of snow. Part of it, my friends, is character. This city is overrun with bureaucrats, politicians, and lobbyists. They look for handouts. They show no initiative. And so when there's a snowstorm, nobody knows what to do. It's classic government. It's a bureaucrat. It's a bureaucratic response. We don't know what to do. We have to wait for the command and control administrator, the top emperor, the top boss, to give us an order on what to do. As I'm driving into the studio, there are fleets of trucks, snow removal trucks on the side of the road. They're not moving. And all I'm thinking is, get on the road and start plowing the snow. This is not rocket science. This is not, we're not solving the problems of pancreatic cancer. This is not the cure for diabetes or Alzheimer's. It's just removing snow. Hey, the Russians can do it. The Finns can do it. People in Chicago, Philadelphia, and New York can do it. The Canadians can do it. If they can do it, why can't we do it? But there's also something else. It's this. Snow in this city paralyzes Washington because we are not allowed to use salt. Where I come from, people drop salt on the road. You expect a snowstorm, you drop some salt. But not according to the Green Lobby. Not according to the environmentalists. No, 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 no. Oh, no. Yesterday at the State of the Union, there was the dear leader. We need renewable energy. We need more solar. We need more wind. We need more pro-green technologies. We have to be like China. We don't need to remake the wheel. We don't need solar power, which is a fraud. We don't need wind power, which is a fraud. Do you know what we need, dear leader? We need one simple thing. We need for government to get out of the way so we can put salt on the roads, so we can have proper roads and the ice doesn't build up and the snow can be removed. Why is salt not being put on the roads, you may ask? Because, according to the leftists in Washington, D.C., all of the radical environmentalists, the salt not only destroys the roads, it pollutes the Potomac. It's bad for the environment. That's why we can't use salt. So even though the Chinese use salt, the Russians use salt, the Europeans use salt, the Canadians use salt, no, 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 no. In the nation's capital, we can't use salt. We can't use salt. So we have to be stranded on the road. Hours and hours of our lives lost in congestion. How many accidents I've seen? How much stress did I endure to just get into this studio? Our lives have to be completely inconvenienced. And I bet several people may even die tonight because of car accidents. But no, we can't use salt. This is the thinking and ideology of a fanatic. This is the thinking and ideology of somebody who is literally disconnected from reality, who puts ideology over experience, reality, and history. It enables societies in cold climates to function, not according to the Green Lobby. And if you want to see how nefarious the liberal left in this country is, look at the dear leader yesterday. What does he want to do? Control our health care. He wants to control our money. He wants to control our very futures by leveraging us with debt and deficits that there's no way we can repay. There's no way we can afford. Every aspect of our lives is slowly being controlled by the government. His wife is pushing now for the government to tell us what we can and can't eat. Don't have French fries. Don't have hamburgers. Don't have Cokes or Pepsis. They're even now controlling what we put in our stomach. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't even end there. Now, New Jersey, I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. You want to see how totalitarian the left is? You want to see how sick the left is? New Jersey now wants to ban sledding. You know, go down a hill, sled, like I did as a child, like most of you did. Why? Because it may lead to lawsuits. When children go down hills and accidentally they get hurt, or a car may hit them, or something may happen, or they may run into some old lady, this could lead to massive lawsuits. So to prevent all this mass litigation, they now want to ban sledding. It's not enough they want to ban cigarettes. It's not enough they want to ban soft drinks. It's not enough they want to ban pizza and cheeseburgers. No. They banned salt. Now they want to ban sledding. But you notice, the one thing they will never ban, oh, this they cannot touch, and that is abortion. When it comes to the murder of unborn children, look how Obama rushes to the defense of the feminists. Then, when it comes to slaughtering unborn children, no, that cannot be banned. Innocent, unborn human life? No, 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 no. That's fair game. But when it comes to sledding, when it comes to even the innocence of our childhood, even that they must control and twist and manipulate. I know, as a child, to me, sledding was one of the great joys of my childhood. And yet, now they want to even take that away from us. And what I don't understand is this. To all the liberals out there, have you no shame? Really, have you no shame? You are the ones that are introducing condoms and pills into our schools. You are the ones that are politicizing our textbooks. You are the ones that are introducing sex education. At the age of 13, when I was still an impressionable young boy, you brought a nurse into my classroom and she showed me how to put a condom on a cucumber, the whole class, and taught me all about sex. All about how to have safe sex, how to have good sex, how to have bisexual sex, transsexual sex, homosexual sex. That's all I kept hearing. And if you want to smoke marijuana, that's okay. You just have to learn all the effects. But it's okay because kids will be kids. So we can decriminalize and legalize marijuana. We can teach sex education. That's no problem. But what about the innocence of our children? Isn't there a certain point where we as a society say, no, you don't have a right to defame the young, the innocent, to take away their childhood. My niece is 11 years old. She shouldn't be dating. She shouldn't be exposed to drugs and promiscuous sex. She's way too young for that. This is the society that you have created. And now even sledding, even the Bolsheviks, even Stalin, at the height of his purge, would never think of banning sledding. That's how far and depraved the liberals have become. My friends, we are losing our freedoms, bit by bit, day by day. And the only question now is, are we going to stand up and slowly say, enough is enough? We are freeborn Americans. Our rights do not come from the government. They don't come from Obama or Nancy Pelosi or any other liberal hack. They come from God Almighty. Let's go to Mike in Washington, D.C. on line 3. Mike, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff? Same situation here. I'm in Northern Virginia. Took almost 2 hours with the SALT II treaty. You know, the trucks are out early last night. All the dump trucks are out. They're putting that solution, that liquid stuff, the day before. Everybody's out there getting the overtime. And when the time comes to clean the actual road that you have to take, it took me approximately for a 15-minute ride today, Jeff, almost 1.5 hours. Now, let me tell you, it's not just the plowing and the government, which is bad enough, but let me tell you what the real problem is. It's the attitude and the no manners of the people who are supposed to be the most affluent in this country. They have no manners. They block intersections. And because they have that Pentagon sticker that they work for the government, they have the same attitude as the politicians who run this country.
Mike, bingo, and I want to thank you for that call. You nailed it. It is the arrogance. It's the imperiousness. They think they own us. They think they own the roads. They think they own this city. They think they can do whatever they want. No, Mike, I see them too. They've been out since last night. These snow removal trucks have been out since last night, and they aren't moving. And they think they're entitled to be charging overtime. And that, by the way, that's our money. That's your money and my money. You want it? You want socialism? That's socialism. You don't give to the poor. This is the great myth of liberalism. They say, oh, we believe in redistribution of income. Like Obama last night at the State of the Union. No, 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 no. We don't want permanent tax cuts for the so-called wealthy. We want to take from the rich and give to the poor. We're Robin Hood. No, you're not. You don't give to the poor. You give to government employees. You give to bureaucrats. Many of them make a hell of a lot more than most Americans in the private sector. It is the greatest con ever invented, because what they're doing is they are buying votes. This is the essence of Obamaism. It is the essence of liberalism. It is the essence of the Democratic Party. It is what Franklin Roosevelt showed the Democrats. How do you think Roosevelt won four terms? Because of his charm? Because he was some great anti-fascist? He wasn't. He couldn't even get us out of the Depression because he bought votes with your taxpayer money. That's what the Democrats have been doing. That's been their strategy for the last 80 years. But my friends, it is now time to pay the piper. There's no more money. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage.
I think that the American people expect and deserve people to come to Washington to work together for them. There are different views that we have here, and that's what I thought was wonderful about the president's speech. That's what a democracy is all about.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. That was Nancy the Piranha Pelosi pulling one of her snow jobs on the American people. As we in Washington are being buried under snow, a couple of inches of snow, absolute gridlock. It's now the lead on the Drudge Report. I saw it coming a couple hours ago when I was in the car coming down to the studio. There's no salt on the roads. The environmentalists prohibit salt. So there's no melting of ice. The snow can't be removed. And so literally cars are piling up. The whole city is shut down. My friends, I don't like to give aid and comfort to the enemy, but I have to here. I mean, I was driving, and let me tell you what I was honestly thinking. If I was Osama bin Laden, I would say, guys, forget Afghanistan, forget Iraq, forget all these suicide bombers. I'd say, my friends, go to Washington. We have snow machines. We buy two snow machines. Saudis give us money. We buy two snow machines. We make snow all around the 495 Beltway. The whole city collapse. We bring the great Satan to his knees. We destroy the American infidel in one blow. Literally. Osama bin Laden can bring this country to its knees by buying 15 snow machines. We can't handle snow. This is how pathetic we've become. It's just a bit of white powder. Guys, get on the road. All of you labor union hacks, get on the road and shovel that snow. It's like in New York with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. The city is held hostage by these labor unions. So, if you want liberalism in action, this is liberalism in action. You don't get your health care. You don't get jobs. You don't get your borders protected. And you don't get your snow cleaned. That's literally liberalism. It's the very definition of a dysfunctional society. Let's go to Bruce in New York. Bruce, thanks for holding. And welcome to the Savage Nation.
Okay, I wanted to say I was very disappointed last night in Greta's interview of Nancy Pelosi. She had her on the ropes, and she didn't go for the kill. Unbelievable.
Bruce, I got to tell you, thanks for that call. I think I slightly disagree with you on this, Bruce. I don't know where she had him on the ropes. Where she had her on the ropes. It was a complete puff interview. I mean, here you have Nancy Pelosi, and I would say you said Obamacare was going to save us money. It didn't. You said you were going to drain the swamp. You didn't. You said that you were going to cut taxes for the middle class. You didn't. You said you were going to control spending. You didn't. You lied in everything that you said. Have you no shame? Are you not embarrassed? And now you praise this con man in chief? My friends, Fox News is part of the phony right. The Savage Nation, along with Jeff Cooner, is part of the real right. Be here or be square. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Ago when Barack Obama became our president, unemployment was 7.8%, and our national debt stood at what seemed like a staggering $10.6 trillion. We wondered whether the president would cut spending, reduce the deficit, and implement real job-creating policies. The president's strategy for recovery was to spend $1 trillion on a failed stimulus program fueled by borrowed money.
That was Michelle Bachmann in her Tea Party address last night. This is Jeff Kuhner from The Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Go to michaelsavage.com. In fact, the lead story, Bachmann, a commitment to following the Constitution. You can read all about her response to Obama. And I got to tell you, I thought she hit the I thought she hit it right out of the park. She hit the nail right on the head. Short and sweet. He's essentially bankrupting America with money that we don't have. And I have to tell you, when I listen to a Michelle Bachmann, all I keep asking myself is, have you noticed that it's the women that seem to be the most prominent voices in the Tea Party movement? That the most courageous, principled, conservative critics of Obama and his socialist gangster regime are not men. They're not phonies like Newt Gingrich or John Bonehead or Mitch McConnell, or I can run down the whole list, all these phony right-wingers at Fox News. It's the Michelle Bachmanns. It's the Sarah Palins. It's the Sharon Angles. I could run down a whole list of them. Why is it that it's women that are disproportionately represented in the Tea Party movement? I know because I speak at many Tea Party rallies. And why is it that it's women that seem to be most vocal and outspoken in their criticism of Obama? Now, I have a theory. I believe that women are essentially the anchor of the home. That women have always been the nobler, more refined, more virtuous of the two sexes. I have always believed that. I see it through my wife. I see it through my family members. I see it through my own mother and grandparents and my own grandmothers. When I look at women throughout history, it was women that civilized men. And what has happened over the last 50 years, it has been one of the greatest social revolutions ever undertaken. We have degraded and in many ways dehumanized women. We have done to women what Marxist revolutionaries have sought to do for over 100 years, and now they have finally succeeded. It is the great victory of the 1960s. And remember this, I have said it before and I will say it again, because I am absolutely convinced that I know I'm right. The greatest revolutionary of the 20th century, contrary to myth, was not Vladimir Lenin. It was not Joseph Stalin. It was not Mussolini or Adolf Hitler. It was Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner accomplished a sexual cultural revolution in America through the supposed Playboy philosophy. And what was it that Hugh Hefner wanted to achieve? He essentially wanted to take women and strip them away from the home, strip them away from motherhood, strip them away from womanhood, strip them away from their chastity and their virtue. Women are angels. They are always been the finer, more nobler, more moral sex, gender. Everybody has known that throughout history. This goes back to the Virgin Mary. And yet Hefner succeeded in convincing women that their supposed, quote, empowerment lay in being a slut. He turned women into sluts, into essentially believing in the snake oil of sexual and personal liberation. Have sex out of wedlock. Have promiscuous sex. Use the pill. In other words, turn yourself into a sexual object. Get into pornography. If you notice now, look at culture. Look at television. You see Skins on MTV. You see Jersey Shore. Look at most programs on television. The way they act and behave and the way they present themselves would have shocked any decent American 40 years ago. It would have been outrageous. In fact, Playboy in the 1950s wasn't even nudity. It was literally Marilyn Monroe, for example, one of the big Playboy stars. She was covered in a bathing suit. It was just showing a little bit of flesh. Then they went topless, then they went full frontal nudity. And that was it. It unleashed an explosion. But women were reduced to sexual objects. And this is what the sexual revolution has done. It has destroyed the family. It has destroyed both men and women. Men no longer, have you noticed? Men no longer live to serve and protect women. This is what we did for centuries. We now, many men are on welfare. Many men no longer work. We would be ashamed, even under the Great Depression, many people were ashamed to be on welfare. They didn't want any handout from the state. My grandfather, his entire life, never once took a government handout, even though he was on the literally on the verge of utter famine and poverty. He refused. He said, that is my honor, and I will not allow any man to pay for me what I should pay for myself. Men now look for handouts. They live on welfare. Many of them now do drugs. If you notice how many men not only get into drugs, but they get into the entire hedonistic lifestyle. It's all about partying. It's all about getting drunk. It's all about going out with their friends. It's spending hours in front of the television doing nothing all day. Is this what they've done to manhood? They've crushed it. And women have lost all of their chastity. And so what I find stunning is now I believe this is not just a political rebellion. It's no accident. It's a social rebellion. Women are now reasserting themselves. Women are saying, I love my children and grandchildren. I will not allow them to live under this mountain of debt. I no longer want the sewage of pornography and abortion into our homes. And so what you are slowly seeing is men trying to become men and women trying to become women. But I have to say, when it comes to courage, when it comes to bravery, when it comes to political principle, I'm not looking to men. I'm looking to women. And that, my friends, shows just how feminized our culture has become. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. 1-800-449-8255. Marsha in Sacramento on line 4. Thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. It's good to be talking to you today. I have an answer for you. Women have been marginalized in America. That means we are not being represented. What you have representing us are feminists who are male wannabes, okay? And the real women, the authentic women of America, the good, decent, honorable women of America have become invisible by the press, by liberal politics, by Obama. We have become invisible, and we want a voice once again in America. Our vote doesn't count.
Marsha, look, your vote, trust me on this, your vote does count, and I want to thank you for that call. Look, what you are seeing has been a relentless assault over the last 50 years upon every major institution in American society. It is a form, it's a revolution. I'm not exaggerating when I say that word. It is a form of cultural Marxism. Look, my wife and I made a fundamental decision a couple of weeks ago. My wife took the initiative and said, you know what, Jeff? This television, this TV box is a form of Satanism. It is destroying our home. Look at everything that it peddles. Sex, violence, drugs, pornography, consumerism, materialism, everything that is wrong, everything that destroys and erodes and undermines one's character. I want it out. I want it completely out. We can have DVDs, we can watch movies, we can watch old shows, but we don't want television in our home. So we got rid of the television. No cable, no nothing. Do you have any idea the peace and serenity that my wife now have? You have, first of all, you'll be amazed at how much time you have in your life, how much that box sucks your time, energy, and soul. But your peace of mind, you are constantly being bombarded with images of nude and lewd women, of drugs, of violence, of fame, of power, of materialism. It's always buy, buy, buy. And when you think about it, we are allowing strangers into our home. If I was to say to you, Is it appropriate to put a television in your church as you do Mass? Is it appropriate for it to be in your synagogue or in your mosque? You'd say you're crazy. No. Why is it appropriate to be in your home? Your home is your sanctuary. We used to know this for centuries, going all the way back to our founding fathers. It is a haven in a heartless world. A man's home is his castle. It is where he gets away from the evil degradation of the world. And instead, we have brought strangers into our house. And who are these strangers? They are liberal actors and liberal screenwriters and liberal producers who are peddling smut and garbage all the time, nonstop. They are amoral, greedy corporate shysters who are trying to sell us one product after another. Honestly, I'm tired of seeing commercials for Viagra and Cialis. Honestly, I've had it. I'm tired of seeing hair replacement. Like, somehow I'm not a man if I don't have a full head of hair. I'm tired of seeing commercials for breast implants. I'm tired of seeing commercials for, you got to lose weight. This pill will make you lose 20 pounds, 30 pounds, 40 pounds. We are an image sex-obsessed society. It is reducing us to the level of adolescence. Children think about sex. My grandfather taught me that. This is stuff that our forefathers used to know instinctively. I'll never forget this. I was a young boy. I was maybe 14, 15. He said, Jeff, let me tell you something. You see this culture here? This post-60s culture? These hippies with their free love and their drugs and their promiscuity? They want to claim your soul. They want you to marry for sex. They want you to think that sex and drugs and living for pleasure is all there is in life. And when you're older, you're going to regret it. You're going to have thrown your life away. You'll have destroyed the chance at love, the chance at a full, meaningful life. Don't marry for sex. Marry for character. Marry for virtue. Marry for love. Because the sex, that goes very fast. You wouldn't believe how fast that goes in a relationship. But a family, a marriage, love between a mother and a father and their children, that lasts a lifetime and even further. That's building. That's civilization. That's an ascent to heaven and godliness. Sex and drugs and violence and pleasure is an ascent towards hell. You are being reduced to an animal. And this is what they are trying to do. They are trying to reduce us to objects. Sex objects. Political objects. Consumer objects. And so what I have to tell you is this. I believe that the Michelle Bachmans and the Sarah Palins and all of these conservative women are saying, no, we Christian women do not want to be in the catacombs anymore. We are tired of your liberal filth and garbage. We are tired of being degraded. We want to protect our children, our family, and our country. My friends, it's a natural instinct. It's a human instinct. It's a conservative instinct. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. We'll be right back after this break. Savage. This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Let's go to Regis in Virginia on line 8. Regis, thank you for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, the problem with America is it's lost its soul. It's lost its spirituality. Something that was taught in our schools years ago, now in the 60s, the left was finally able to get the Supreme Court to remove the basis of our Constitution and our life out of the school system and replace it with, guess what? Secular humanism, which teaches that drugs is okay, homosexuality is all right, which, by the way, now the American Psychological Association no longer supports it as being genetic, but you're not going to hear that. But, I mean, you know, all these things are coming to fruition. They've been teaching it to our kids. That's why the liberals want to give more and more to education, because they get them in there and they teach them everything that's based on atheism.
Bingo. Like, I mean, Regis, before. Look, you, Ringo, Bingo, Regis, you are so right. Look, our children are being indoctrinated and propagandized. It is a form of cultural leftist propaganda, no different in many ways than what happened under the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. This is progressive education. And the goal, believe me, don't believe me, it's up to you, take it for what it's worth, is they want to occupy your child's mind, they want to capture your child's mind, and ultimately your child's soul. That's the purpose of progressive education. They want your child to be a warm, fuzzy environmentalist. Don't worship God, worship Mother Gaia. They want your child to believe the nonsense of socialism, that to be a good person means you have to redistribute your income. Well, by their own definition, let me ask all of these leftists one very simple thing. All of them love to cite the Bible. They're always citing scripture. As Shakespeare said, even the devil can cite scripture for his own purposes. So it's Jesus a socialist. Have you noticed that? When it's Christmas time, there's Obama, there's the dear leader, there's Dirty Harry, there's Nancy the Piranha Pelosi. Oh, no. Scripture says we have to share with the poor. We have to give to the poor. We have to redistribute income. We have to have a social safety net. Where in the Bible does it say? Show me one place where it says the government was coerce money from your pocket, your taxes, upon pain of penalty of going to prison to give to the poor. That's socialism. It is a form of coercion. What the Bible says is you must give with an open heart, an open, cheerful heart. That's the difference between Christianity and socialism. It is voluntary charity, not involuntary charity. And so when you look at all these socialists, they always want to take your money and give to the poor. They love to be morally self-indulgent. They love to be morally smug. They love to think of themselves as being so morally self-righteous. Why don't you give away your own fortunes? Why doesn't Al Gore give away his fortune? Bruce Springsteen, he's always going on tour after tour, this leftist masquerading as a rock star. And he runs around saying, no, we have to create a socialist community. We have to create a socialist society, a communitarian society. Bruce, you're sitting on tens of millions of dollars. Hey, baby, give it away. But you don't want to give it away. You want my money to take care of the poor. And the money doesn't even go to the poor. It goes to the bureaucrats and the bureaucracy and all these leeches off the government, these welfare bums. It doesn't go to the deserving poor. My father came with nothing. My grandfather came with nothing, literally a suitcase in their hand. And they all made something of themselves. This is the land of opportunity. If you work hard and you practice religious family values, if you worship God, go to church on Sunday, have a clean and sober life, a chaste life, practice personal responsibility, there is nothing that can stop you. Look at all these illegal immigrants that the liberals love. Look at all of them. With hardly nothing, they scrounge and work and save. And they're able to provide not only for their families, but for those in Mexico. This is the land of opportunity. And my friends, it will no longer be if the socialists have their way. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The debt will soon eclipse our entire economy and grow to catastrophic levels in the years ahead. On this current path, when my three children are raising their own children, the federal government will double in size, and so will the taxes they pay. No economy can sustain such high levels of debt and taxation. Frankly, it's one of my greatest concerns as a parent, and I know many of you feel the same way.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Michael is away tonight. I'm filling in for him. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest stories, not only on the State of the Union speech. There are protests in Egypt that could easily escalate and get out of control. You can read about the growing threat of radical Islam in the Caucasus, the latest explosion in a Moscow airport, that and so much more by going to michaelsavage.com. That was Congressman Paul Ryan. And for many Republicans here on Capitol Hill, he is now the rising star. He is now their top budget point man for the GOP, who is going to lay out a blueprint for the Republicans to present as an alternative to Obama's tax and spend liberal regime. And yet, I have to ask myself, I like Paul Ryan. He's a smart, brainy guy. He's obviously a well-read guy. But where was he and where were the Republicans under George Bush? Now, all of a sudden, Paul Ryan is a parent. Now he's got three children. Suddenly now the Republicans are concerned about the debt and deficits. Now, all of a sudden, they found Jesus. Now they've all become born-again fiscal hawks. All of a sudden now, literally, now it's no. Now it's all out of control. Now we have to be prudent and responsible. Now we have to cut spending. Now we have to balance our books. Oh, really? So under George Bush, when you guys racked up runaway deficits, when you get past No Child Left Behind, when you passed the massive expansion of the welfare state since the Great Society, the prescription drug benefit, when you pushed, led by Karl Rove and George Bush and all these other phony Republicans, when you pushed for amnesty for illegal immigrants, where were you? Where were all these supposed conservative Republicans? You weren't talking about our children then. No, then we were all compassionate conservatives. Then we were all big government conservatives. Then, no, we can grow our way out of anything. That was the Wall Street Journal's line. We can just cut taxes and grow our way through anything. Endless economic growth. My friends, that is now over. We have now reached the tipping point. The chickens have come home to roost. And now, the past decade, all of the drunken orgy spending, all of the reckless entitlement expansion, all of the massive deficits have now put us at the place where we are with Greece and Ireland and Portugal and Europe. We are now on the verge of going bankrupt. And the reason why I believe Obama may actually win in 2012, you won't hear this from other talk radio hosts. You won't hear this from the phony right on Fox News, is that the Republicans and the so-called conservative movement have not put forth a strong, viable conservative alternative. Because in the end, many Americans don't believe that an Eric Cantor or a Mitch McConnell or a John Bonehead is serious. They don't. They know they were part of the Jack Abramoff crowd. They know Karl Rove was part of the Jack Abramoff crowd. They know George W. Bush was one of the biggest spending Great Society Republicans we have ever seen. They know how complicit many of the Republicans are to now the liberal disaster that has befallen us. And so many Americans don't trust the Republican Party, and rightly so. And just like the 1930s, Roosevelt failed to reverse the Depression. He failed to revive economic growth. Every one of his policies completely failed. He only did one thing. Just like Obama, he massively increased the debt. He was an utter failure as president. And yet, He used the welfare state to buy votes. Urban ethnics, he bought them. The solid South, he bought them. African Americans, he bought them. Labor unions, he bought them. He stitched together the Democratic coalition that in many ways lasted until Nixon and to some degree has continued to this day. You use the power of the purse to bribe the electorate. You turn society into a bordello. That's what liberalism does. It degrades a republic and it degrades a democracy. Take from Peter to pay Paul. Pit the citizens against one another. Class war, ethnic war, cultural war. That's been the democratic strategy. Divide and conquer. And throughout the 1930s, even though the soup lines went around the block, even though every other European country far surpassed the United States in getting out of the Depression, the American people voted for FDR again and again. Why? Why? Were they stupid? No. They had become addicted to socialism and government handouts. Their character had been corroded, destroyed. And the Republicans never put forth a viable, strong alternative. They put up the likes of Thomas Dewey and Wendell Willkie, no names and no nothings, phony Republicans. That's what we got in 2008 with John McCain, and mark my words, that's what we're probably going to get again in 2012 if the Republican establishment has its way. And so this is to me the great crisis of the Republican Party. I said, have you noticed how far November 2nd already seems? That was supposed to be the key watershed. That was the point where Obama's social democratic transformation of America was to be repudiated. And already within 9 weeks, look how everything has changed. He is repositioning himself as a phony centrist. He has a tax deal, a bipartisan tax deal that the Republicans capitulated on. He has achieved his most important social policy objective, the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Our military has been gutted. It has been destroyed by Obama. And now the homosexual lobby has their champion in the White House. He has now achieved for the gay community what they have only dreamed of for the past several decades. Notice now how the left, they now love him because he has given them gays in the military and he gave them START. He has gutted missile defense. He has sold our national security down the river to get a phony treaty with the Russians. Already, he is successfully repackaging himself as a moderate, as a centrist. He's evoking Ronald Reagan. He's consolidating his socialist anti-Reagan agenda of the first 2 years. The Republicans have lost the wind at their back. They've already lost their momentum. When Obama won in 2008, James Carville, that hack for Bill Clinton, that political thug who did much of Clinton's dirty work, burying his political enemies, covering up his scandals, who was part of that Arkansas mafia that rode into the White House, came out on CNN and he said, we now have a Republican ascendancy for 40 years. That lasted 2 years. But what about the Republican ascendancy of November 2nd? That has only lasted 2 months. Not 2 years, 2 months. Already, they are on the defensive. Already, they have been outmaneuvered by Obama at every turn. And the biggest maneuver, the biggest con that Obama perpetrated against the Republicans and against the GOP, to me, he took them to the cleaners, was that stimulus 2 package that he negotiated, that extension of the Bush tax cuts with $313 billion for more long-term unemployment insurance benefits. Why? Why was this the key victory for Obama? Because it gave him what he desperately needed,
another stimulus package, a major sugar high for a pre-election campaign. He now has injected another $1 trillion into the economy, and the Republicans helped him do it. Lindsey Graham, who I'm not a fan of, was honest enough to admit when he said this, after that deal was signed, he said, Harry, meaning Harry Reid, has just eaten our lunch. No, Lindsey. No, Senator Graham. It wasn't Harry. It was Barry that ate your lunch. And now the Chicago boys have been brought in. Bill Daley and all these other hacks have now been brought in. And they have one goal, to get this president reelected. And so at the State of the Union, you want me to be a centrist? I'm a centrist. You want me to be a hawk? I'm a hawk. You want me to be an environmentalist? I'm an environmentalist. You want me to be the pro-civility, pro-education president? I'm pro-civility and pro-education. Will I pimp a 9-year-old memorial? I'll even bring out the hero of Tucson and have him sit beside Michelle Obama. I will do whatever it takes to get reelected. And what will the Republicans do? Just like in the 1930s, throw up one weak, ineffectual, cowardly candidate after another. FDR nearly destroyed America. Obama will. And the question I have for all of you is this. Do you believe the Republicans can present a strong enough alternative that will compel Americans to vote Obama out in 2012? Are the Republicans strong enough to defeat Obama? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. If you want to read my column in the Washington Times every Friday, just go to washingtontimes.com and you can just punch in my last name, Cooner, K-U-H, N as in Nancy, E-R, or just go to commentary and you can read my columns every Friday. They appear in the Washington Times. Let's go to Ross in North Carolina on line 3. Ross, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Jeff, good points about you, Hefner, and TV, which satanic, I think, is the right word. I pulled the plug on it a year ago. And for all we know, it could be the image of the beast. But I got to disagree about Obama in 2012. I don't think he's going to run. And if he does run, even with $1 billion in his pocket, I don't think he could be elected dog catcher. Very few people have the nerve to actually say that he's done so much damage to this country, and he has to be aware of it, that a high school senior could have done a better job. There's going to be a financial cataclysm. He cannot win. And I think he was appointed president and took the job on a one-term basis and did as much damage as he could. Just look at his track record. Look at his, you know, his biographies, autobiographies. We say the words, but we don't want to say he's actually intent on bringing down America. But I'll say it.
No, Ross, you're right. And Ross, I really want to thank you for that call. This may be the call of the evening. Look, don't get me wrong. I want Obama to be a one-termer. I have dedicated my entire career to bringing this man down. In fact, I know for a fact I am on the White House's enemies list. They fear me, just as they fear Michael Savage. But my point is a different one. Yes, you're completely right. This man's entire life, his entire biography, has been to get him into the White House to destroy and wreck America. It's no accident. His father, which the left-wing press doesn't want you to know about, was an intellectual. He was an anti-colonialist left-winger. He hated the West. He hated America. He loved socialism. He hated the colonial West. America was the source of exploitation and oppression. Capitalism must be destroyed. In fact, Obama is even candid about that. That's why one of his autobiographies is called Dreams of My Father. The dreams of my father to create a socially just society, a progressive utopia, socialism, the very embodiment of anti-Americanism, the opposite of America. His mentor was Frank Marshall Davis. He was a member of the Communist Party. When I say communist, I don't mean like loosely throwing that label. He was a member of the Communist Party of America. He championed world revolution, communism, and Marxism. Jeremiah Wright is a black liberation theologist who hates America and wants a socialist revolution. Bill Ayers, who he was very close to, contrary to all the spin and the lies in the mainstream media, they were friends. They went to the same conferences. In fact, he held a fundraiser in Bill Ayers' home. Bill Ayers was on the streets of Washington and New York and Chicago, chanting for the defeat of America in Vietnam. That is the man that Obama is. He is wrecking this country. The only question is, can the Republicans stop him? This is Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Savage.
The idea of America endures. Our destiny remains our choice. And tonight, more than two centuries later, it's because of our people that our future is hopeful, our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Well, that was the con man in chief at his State of the Union address last night. This is Jeff Kuhner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. What did you think of the speech? Was it an effective speech? Did it persuade you? Do you think it persuaded most Americans that the state of our union is strong? That, in fact, he's in firm command of the ship of state? Or did you see what I saw? A pathetic, third-rate con man who is trying to con the members of his own party, members of Congress, and the American people into believing that he, in fact, knows how to lead us at the end of the tunnel, the light at the end of this tunnel, that he can lead us to the land of milk and honey again. Because I have to tell you, if I'm Obama, I'm sitting in the driver's seat. I came in here with a determination to be a one-term president. Remember, he said it himself. I would rather be a great one-term president than a, quote, mediocre two-term president. And when he meant mediocre, he meant being wishy-washy. He meant being a compromise president. When he means great, he means to be a socialist president, to be an ideologically pure president, to be a destructive, anti-American, anti-capitalist president. And that's what he has done for the first 2 years. And now his people are telling him, you know what, dear leader? I even see victory in 2012. This miracle that occurred in 2008, it could happen one more time. You can walk on water one more time and reemerge as the great liberal messiah. And we can finish this revolution that we've started. We can now break the back of American industry by passing cap and trade. We can break the back of America and completely lose in Iraq and Afghanistan. And most importantly, this is the crown jewel. This will cement our party and the liberal regime for generations to come. It will be the final triumph of the third world socialist revolution we have been hungering for. We will grant amnesty to illegal immigrants, all 20 million of them and their children and family members. And that will change America forever. A permanent majority, a permanent pool of voters that will keep voting in Democrat after Democrat after Democrat. And so now Obama sees the possibility of a re-election. And my question to you is a very simple one. Are the Republicans strong enough to stop him in 2012? Do the Republicans have what it takes? Do they have the courage, the intellectual ability, the vision to portray and articulate a forceful, principled, conservative alternative that will rally and galvanize middle America before it's too late? 1-800-449-8255. Let us go to Sharon in Portland, Oregon on line 3. Sharon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff. I had a comment. You asked the question about whether or not a Republican could be elected against Obama.
Yes.
I don't believe so. I'm
Why?
Independent. I just got information from the Republican Party asking me for a donation. I won't donate to any of their candidates because they don't support the Tea Party people. I don't care for their go-along, get-along policy. I've been seeing all along. So what I did in the last election, I sent donations to Tea Party candidates of my choice.
Sharon, that's what I tell everybody to do, and I want to thank you for that call. Don't vote for the party. Vote for the candidate. Don't vote for the machine. Vote for your values. And the Republicans are going to have to find out. Unless they get new blood, unless they change their stripes, unless they become a serious conservative nationalist party, a real opposition to the one world liberalism of Obama, they're no good to us. We don't want socialism at full speed or socialism by half measures. That's what the Republicans have been giving us ever since FDR. Have you noticed that? Ever since FDR, the Republicans have been giving us socialism in slow motion. They couldn't roll back the New Deal. They couldn't roll back the Great Society. Even the great Ronald Reagan couldn't repeal the welfare state. Even he wasn't strong enough to do it. And this is why I've told people before, and I'll say it again. The greatest enemy of the 20th century has been the behemoth of the welfare state. It devours everything in its path. It's a juggernaut. It cannot be stopped unless there is a concerted effort to crush it. Why? Because it appeals to the worst in us. It appeals to the lazy person in us, the sloth in us, the parasite in us, the leech in us, the one who doesn't want to get up and work, who wants things handed to us, who thinks he's entitled to everything, the one who doesn't want to really earn what he has to make. No. What the welfare state says is, you don't have to earn it, you're owed it. And that, my friends, is the sin of envy. It is the sin of pride. It is exactly what the Bible warns against. This is why Jesus always said, if you remember, and it goes not just Jesus, all the way back to Moses, do not covet your neighbor's goods. Do not covet your neighbor's wife. Do not covet what is not yours. If you do, that is the poisoned fruit. That is the welfare state. And that's why, if you've noticed, look how dependent we have become. We now have a budget that is now over $3 trillion. That is bigger than the economies of almost any other country on earth. That's how huge, not our GNP, just our budget. Let me tell you one statistic that the dear leader and the liberal lamestream media refuse to tell you. Just last week, our national debt now ticked over $14 trillion. Say, Jeff, what's $14 trillion? Why is that figure a magical figure? Because that, my friends, is the total size of our economy. That is our gross national product, $14 trillion, 14.3 to be specific. Every international economist, going back decades, the IMF, the World Bank, name your global institution, has said once GNP and debt, the ratio of debt to GNP is 100%, as it is now for America, there's no going back. You are literally, that's the definition of being nationally bankrupt. You won't be able to make the interest payments on your debt, and eventually you will have to foreclose. They call it sovereign bankruptcy, national bankruptcy. That's what happened in Greece. That's what happened in Iceland. That's what happened in Ireland. That is what is about to happen in Portugal, Spain, and Italy. They are toppling like dominoes. And so now, at Davos, as I speak to you right now, there is a gathering of economists and business leaders and finance ministers. They are all coming out and saying, the American economy is terminally sick. It is the sick man of the world. And it is up to the Chinese to keep buying our debt. We are now going down the path of enslavement. This is what we have come to as a nation. Now I ask you, among us friends here on the Savage Nation, is this what our founding fathers wanted for us? Is this what the boys at Normandy, who went on those beaches and fought the Nazis and risked their lives, is this what they wanted for us? Is this what they died for? The boys now that weren't even hardly mentioned in the State of the Union, that we don't even think about, they're not even on the back pages of our newspapers, who are now engaged in life-death battles in the caves and mountains of Afghanistan, fighting radical Islamist butchers who want to slit our throats the second they get a chance. What are they dying for? So what? We can bankrupt our nation? We can destroy our children's future? We can destroy all the freedoms that everybody has died for the past couple hundred years? My friends, what is happening in this city? I'm sorry. I'm not going to be a phony optimist on Fox News. I'm not going to tell you tomorrow is better than today. It is not only immoral. It is not only unethical. I swear to you on my ancestors, it is a crime. It is a crime against history. It is a crime against our Constitution. It is a crime against our Republic. And that is why I have said this before and I'll say it again. And George Soros's enemies are all after me. Media Matters, they love to smear me, just as they go after Michael Savage. Well, let me say it one more time. Obama is a betrayer. Obama is an enemy. Obama is a traitor. And he knows he's a traitor. By his own admission, we know he's a traitor. Because he told us, when asked, what is your goal as president? It is to create a, quote, post-American world. A world where America is no longer dominant. It is one nation among many. Well, I'm sorry, but my America and the America our boys and daughters are dying in Afghanistan fighting for, and those that died in Normandy and those that died in Bunker Hill didn't believe that America is one among many. This is God's last best hope on mankind, on earth. Here is a city upon a hill, and we have created something utterly exceptional. And history, my friends, is going to ask one question. How did such a free, great, and prosperous people, after World War II, when the world was at its feet, its economy, its military, its culture, utterly dominant, the whole world envied and wanted to be like America. Behind the Iron Curtain, people died crossing the Berlin Wall to come to the West. How was it that within our bosom, within our midst, within the very belly of our country, emerged a generation from the 1960s, spoiled, selfish, self-indulgent, and wrecked everything? Our family, our society, our churches, our homes, our culture, our budgets, our government, our borders, our military, nothing is sacred to them. Even our unborn children they must take. How did they come to power? And how did so many good Americans stay quiet, stay cowardly, stay silent as they lost their country, one painful blow after painful blow? That, my friends, is the real question. And so what I'm telling all of you, believe me, don't believe me, Ancient Greece came and went. Ancient Rome came and went. The British Empire came and went. America, too, if we are not careful, will come and go. And the only question you have to ask yourself is, did you speak out? Did you stand up for the stars and stripes? Did you stand up for the home of the brave and the land of the free? Or were you quiet? That's the only question. Did you speak out or were you silent? Let's go to Greg in Reno, Nevada on line 10. Greg, thanks for holding and welcome to the Savage Nation.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. I want to say you're my favorite fill-in talk show host.
Oh, thanks, Greg.
Savage. I've been listening to him for over 13 years. I voted for Duncan Hunter and I voted for Sharon Angle. And if you remember correctly, both of them said that, you should put Social Security in a lockbox if you want to be able to preserve it.
No, I mean, I want to thank you for that call. Greg, look, Social Security is a massive Ponzi scheme. It is taking money from one generation to pay another. Most people who pay into Social Security, so I've always been against Social Security on principle, as a matter of ethics and morality. I don't know how you can be for Social Security. By the time you're finished paying into Social Security, let's say you retire at 65, you have used up your benefits by 67, 68. If you live till 75, 77, 80, as most people do, you are now having other workers pay for your retirement. You're not paying for your own retirement. You are asking future generations to pay for your own retirement. Yet for 2,000 years, people always paid for their own retirement. My grandfather paid for his own retirement. He put money away for my retirement. He paid off his house. He paid off his cars. He paid off his land. Everything was paid. And then money was put aside for his retirement. And the goal of life wasn't to end the last 10 years of your life on a golf course or doing some yoga or standing around in some swimming pool or doing a cruise around the world. No, he lived. He continued to work a little bit. He took pride in his family. He was a man of character, honor, and wisdom who lived a full life. My friends, look how far we have fallen. And so, as far as Social Security is concerned, to me, I would privatize that tomorrow. What I would say to those is this: if you've paid, you deserve what you've paid. To future generations, I'm sorry. Do like everybody else. Pay for your own retirement. Carry your own water. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. The show just blew by today, my friends. You know what? I'm going to ask you for your prayers to help me get home tonight. I got to battle the snowstorm. We are literally, the city has ground to a halt. There is utter gridlock in Washington. A couple inches of snow, and that's it. The great superpower of the world, the modern-day Rome of the Roman Empire, has been brought to its knees. Cars on the side of the road, congestion everywhere, snow trucks nowhere to be seen. But hey, at least we aren't using any salt on the roads. The fish in the Potomac will be safe. So the fish, while we suffer here, while Jeff Cooner freezes to death on the roads tonight, be comfortable, be comforted by the fact that the fish, they're fine. The fish, you're going to have nice fish. This summer, you want to eat some fish from the Potomac? Believe me, the fish will be fantastic for all of you this summer. Jeff Cooner, that's another matter. You know, my friends, I have to tell you this. The longer you live in this city, you feel like you live in an insane asylum. You really do. And after a while, you realize the inmates are running the asylum. And what's white is black, and what's black is white. So everything, the union is strong. We may be losing in Afghanistan, the union is strong. We may be racking up record deficits, the union is strong. We may have destroyed our healthcare sector, the union is strong.
We may not protect our borders with Mexico. The union is strong. We may be completely swamped in corruption. The union is strong. It's always strong. When we're weak, we're strong. When we're strong, we're weak. Welcome to Washington, D.C. And after a while, you begin to realize that the people who come to Washington, the likes of Nancy Pelosi, Dirty Harry Reid, Barack Obama, deep down, they have no soul. Deep down, they're empty. They have no moral character. All they have is an insatiable lust for power. Virtue doesn't lie in Washington. It lies in you. It lies in the American heartland. That is what conservatives have always understood. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Savage.